Obviously, the Guthrie kidnapping situation is very much in the news, and a massive mystery is underway. This is so rare. This is so, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it is so uncommon in the American experience when you're talking about adults. And joining us right now, we have Buffalo attorney and former New York State Trooper John Elmore. John, thanks very much. Really appreciate you being with us on WBEN.
Tom, it's always good to hear from you. I hope you're having a great day.
Always a great day and nothing but. First of all, give me your general thoughts on everything we think we know.
Well, first of all, it appears as though money might be a motivation because some local news outlets have been receiving instructions to make payments on crypto. And so I think that's it's very obvious that this was a forcible abduction. There was blood stains found on the woman's porch. Also, the camera, the doorbell camera, was forcibly removed. So it was obviously a kidnapping. She's been gone for 5 days. The longer this woman is gone, the less likely it would be that she would survive. Particularly since there's some life-saving medication that she needs that was not taken away from her. But the key is you have the FBI involved, you have local police involved, and in today's world, it's hard to not leave some type of evidence. I mean, when you travel and you have a cell phone, your cell phone gets tracked by cell phone towers. They can they have what's known as pings. And so I'm sure that the police are going to be, or the FBI is going to be looking at for some cell phone tower evidence to see who was at that location. They're going to be looking at people's surveillance cameras in this neighborhood. It was a fairly affluent neighborhood at the foot of the mountains, and obviously those people at those property owners likely have some sort of surveillance cameras. They can look at them, and you know, whatever evidence was left at the scene, and then whatever they can track from the contact, the people that have tried to contact the social, asking for crypto payments for the local media, maybe those sources could be tracked.
Let's just go through some of those. We're talking with John Elmore on News Radio 930 WBEN. First of all, the cell phone pings. Is it really possible to isolate the area of Ms. Guthrie's house and determine which cell phone numbers were in the proximity, even if they weren't active, around the time of the kidnapping?
When you move, I've had a lot of cases as a criminal lawyer and as a criminal defense attorney, and the cell phones towers keep track of what telephones are in the area. And think about it, your cell phone has a GPS tracking device on it, right? So, you know, when you make a call, or when you're on social media, or you use your cell phone for anything, your location is known, and there's in people's automobiles, there's also tracking devices as well. So there's just a lot of technology. There's a lot of things that are not private. As you drive around a city, police officers have not tracking devices, but license plate readers, right?
Sure.
So
sure.
If there was a police officer in that area driving up and down the street, every vehicle would have automatically gotten their license plates number. So there's not a lot of privacy in, you know, where we are now. I mean, think about the murder in New York City where they captured that man Jones, who killed the United Healthcare executive that was masked in a crowded New York City street, but they were able to track him using you know, using cameras, police cameras. They were able to get pictures and eventually they caught the guy somewhere in Pennsylvania, you know. Right. Or think about the shooter that killed Charlie Kirk. Somehow they blew up a picture, and it was pretty obvious from the T-shirt that he was wearing. You know, I mean, it may have looked like a long shot, but eventually they caught him. So these guys, when you have the FBI involved and local police, and it becomes a high-profile case, and everywhere you go, you're being surveilled. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you drive from your house to your office, you're going to be driving by police cameras, by police officers that have, you know, readers that can read your plate, cameras all over the place. People have cell phones. They're always taking pictures. And somebody is going to somehow contact the police and say, you know, we found something different. Now, the first thing the police are going to do is they're going to look at the crime scene. Right. And find out what kind of evidence was left at the crime scene. So there was a struggle because there was blood on the looks like on the patio or front door sidewalks. So there's a struggle. Somebody removed the doorbell camera, so there might be some fingerprint evidence. There might be some DNA evidence, and. You know, our DNA and our fingerprints aren't private anymore. When you go to the airport now, you know, not only, you know, sometimes they want to take, I mean, they're going to look at your eyeballs, to detect exactly who you are just from looking at your eyeballs. And then, you know, all of these stores have facial recognition technology. I mean, we just reading right now about Wegmans here in Buffalo. And when you go into Wegmans, you know, they're screening people's facial technology and using that data. So how much privacy is there really? I mean, so, you know, when you open up your computer sometimes, the computer, you know, will recognize your face and you don't have to punch in your ID number. And they have it now so that your phones, you know, you can facial recognition to just, rather than use a password, look at your phone. So The tech companies and the social media companies and the government, everything that they have, it's data that they collect.
You know, I want to back up here a little bit. John Elmore, Buffalo attorney, former New York State trooper on News Radio 930 WBEN on the Guthrie kidnapping situation. You've alluded to the removal of the Ring doorbell. Now, can we conclude, number one, that they knew there was a Ring camera there by way of surveilling the scene of the crime before the crime was committed? Number two, can we assume a level of technical expertise?
The doorbell cameras, I mean, you can order them online and install them yourself. So there's a pretty simple way to do it. And so I don't think it would require any special expertise to take it off.
But I mean, the fact that they took it off, John, does that indicate that the location, the crime scene, had actually been actively surveilled in the days or hours prior to the alleged abduction?
That's very likely. I mean, how would they find out that she lived there? There had to be doing some type of planning. They would do. And the other thing is people oftentimes tell on themselves, you know, in social media. I mean, you know, did they have anything against Savannah Guthrie? Did they, you know, I mean, if they go to the social media, did, you know, were there any negative comments about Savannah Guthrie? You know, is there some political motivation about it or some buddy that's being starstruck or whatever? But, you know, with artificial intelligence and the amount of data that's out there, and the FBI, it just has such unlimited resources. And, you know, when you have the president and the attorney general say, you know, this is a priority to us and we're going to send, you know, everybody out here to find and capture this individual, I don't think it's It's a matter of if they're going to catch the person. It is when they're going to catch the person. And the clock is ticking because the longer Nancy Guthrie is in the hands of these kidnappers, the more likely it is that she's not going to survive.
John, how likely is it that we're talking about multiple suspects and not one suspect?
That's a difficult question, and probably the agents would be the better person to know, and discuss that. But they might even based upon the artificial intelligence and the crime scene investigation and the notes that were sent to the social media, to the local news, asking for crypto, they may even develop some sort of psychological profile of this perpetrator. There's a lot.
Let's talk about that a little bit. And I'm sure that. And John, how long do you have to spend with us? Because I've got a million questions for you, give or take.
Well, Tom, listen. I admire you. We have a good relationship that goes all the way back to the O.J. Simpson trial. And when I got the message that you wanted me on the show, I cleared my calendar until 4:15.
You are both a gentleman and a scholar, and we appreciate that because a zillion questions.
But Tom, in private, I've told everybody, man, that you think so fast on your feet, and you are so persuasive in your arguments, whether people are politically agreeable with you or a lot. There's a lot of lawyers in this area that are glad that Tom Bowerly is a radio personality rather than a lawyer.
Well, okay? I'll let my daughter handle legal stuff, okay? John Elmore is with us. We have a mutual admiration society. What can I say? John and I literally have known each other for a very long time. Talking about the... you brought this up, and I think this is on everybody's mind, this whole time factor. Generally speaking, whether it is a child kidnapping, which is much more common than an adult kidnapping, or anything else, the more time goes by, the less probable a happy outcome is going to be. And then you add in the data point about the medication Ms. Guthrie needs.
That's correct. And so... What a lot of kidnappings are found because the person that's kidnapped can give signals or pleas for help, whether, if they're in public signaling, if they're making noise, if they can find a telephone and leave the telephone off the hook, or sometimes when the perpetrator will allow the person that's kidnapped to make some sort of a message and plea for help. And that would help identify the location as well. But this investigation has got to first start with the crime scene. Mm-hmm. What was left behind? Is there a footprint? Is there a fingerprint? Is there DNA in the house? Was anything touched? Then they would have to look at the immediate neighborhood. In the neighborhood, what people... I mean, this neighborhood was described as being at the foothills of a neighborhood outside of Tucson where it was a fairly wealthy neighborhood. The houses aren't piled upon each other, so if it's a wealthy neighborhood, typically there's a lot of cameras and security devices in those neighborhoods. And then I read something about a report of somebody just a couple days ago kicking a trespasser off their private off their land because a sensor went off. So what what can they find about that person? But let's go to the scene. Is there a footprint? Is there a fingerprint? Was any DNA evidence? Was there a piece of clothing? If there was a struggle that was left. And then if there was a car involved, were there any tire marks? And then you go to the surrounding area, look at all the police cars in the area and see if there were any license plates readers and put that into the data. And that with artificial intelligence, they can screen that stuff out real fast. And then you have to go to maybe, you know, what type of tools would somebody use if they were going to commit a kidnapping? Maybe duct tape, a screwdriver to get in there. I'm not sure. But, you know, look at the local hardware stores and talk to the people there. And was there anybody here that did anything suspicious? Is there anything that you know? And knocking on doors, you know, the old cops, you know, the leather shoe cops, you know, just knocking on doors and pounding the pavement and questioning a lot of people. And then, you know, obviously these people are bad people, right? And bad people hang around bad people. And when you hang around bad people, they could have been hanging around some bad people that want to become snitches because they might have a case. And if they turn themselves into the police and they want to get favor, they'll you know, get a better deal. So,
you know, I want to talk about that coming up, because I heard one of the analysts at some point say, hey, look, the Clutter family case, In Cold Blood, Truman Capote, the whole reason that started was some jailhouse rumor about the farmer having a lot of money in his house, which he did not have, and the entire family lost their lives. And you mentioned footprints before. One of the big pieces of evidence for the prosecution in that case happened to have been a boot that was worn by one of the killers, which he still was wearing at the time of his arrest, and eventually the two killers Perry Smith and Hickok were convicted and hanged. So I want to get into victimology, and I want to get into the whole jailhouse milieu thing coming up as possible avenues of exploration, as well as the Bitcoin, an alleged demand for Bitcoin, and if we can make any assumptions on the perpetrators based on that specific plea for a ransom. I don't think they've checked the price of Bitcoin today. And John Elmore is with us, former New York State trooper and a very well-regarded Buffalo attorney on News Radio 930 WBEN. Our phone number is 803-0930, 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. When you're looking at a case like this in law enforcement, can you explain to everybody listening what goes into victimology? Why this woman? Why now?
Well, I just Googled the salary of Savannah Guthrie, who earns approximately $8 million annually as the co-anchor of the NBC Today show. So money could be a factor, or it could be someone that is just simply mentally ill. Sometimes kidnappings are political and murders are political, but it doesn't appear to me that there's anything that the TV host would say or anything, I think, that was controversial or way to the left or way to the right where she'd have any political enemies. So I would assume that would just be money. One thing that people should understand, though, is that the police are not going to tell everything that they've gathered. They're not, you know, they even if they have a suspect in mind and even a photograph of the suspect in mind, they're probably not going to disclose that right away. They may want the kidnapper to feel that they don't know the kidnapper's identity, because more likely if they did disclose the kidnapper's identity, then maybe, you know, the body could be buried, you know, or hidden some way or whatever. But think about this: if you love your mom and you're earning $8 million a year, right, and you want her to be safe and secure, she's going to be in a house that has more than a doorbell video. There's going to be sensors and there's going to be cameras all around that house. And I wouldn't be surprised if the fact that, you know, that the police actually have video of that person coming into the house and leaving the house. and maybe even have a suspect in mind, but don't want the public to know who that suspect is.
John Elmore is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. When we think about people who would do something like this, and obviously this would be a quadruple murder and not a kidnapping, but getting back to Truman Capote in cold blood, the people who were hanged for that, Hickok and Smith, basically before those that mass murder, they were just bums. They were just nickel and dime hoodlums, and they were in jail. Mm-hmm. And one of their people said, "Hey, this Clutter guy, he's got a whole bunch of money in his house and is safe." And they went and suddenly became killers. So, forgive the preamble, but what kind of a criminal past is somebody likely to have who would do something like this? Because I cannot believe this is their first offense.
Wow. That's a tough question, Tom. And I think that when you find out who did it, the person might just be weird. Think about the person down in Butler, Pennsylvania that tried to kill the president. No criminal past, but mental disturbances, right? Think about the person that tried to assassin Charlie Kirk. It was a mentally ill person. So it could be mental illness, it could be political, it could be just a bad, evil person that's a career criminal that tried to commit it and do some extortion. I would say, though, the fact that they're trying to get the money in crypto would mean that they have to have some sort of sophistication with computers and sophistication with that crypto technology so that they could demand that money and get that money and hide it and utilize it without disclosing who they are. So I would probably likely say that would be somebody that had a fascination with crypto. I don't know. I invest in stocks and bonds. I don't trust crypto.
Oh, live a little, John. Live a little.
Okay, I know.
That's
a
your
lot
casino
of people,
money right there.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Okay, Tom. But I've never spent a nickel or invested a nickel on crypto. But then again,
I heard some analysts over the weekend saying the fact that the ransom is apparently being asked for in Bitcoin would indicate the relative youth of the suspect. Are you going along with that?
Yeah, I think younger people tend to trust it a lot more than me. I'm on the other side of 60, closer to 70, so I don't understand it or trust it. But my three children, they understand it a little bit more, and they're not afraid of it like me. So I would suggest that, maybe somebody 40, at least under 50, right?
Well, if nothing else, pretty much all the markets are down today. The precious metals markets are down. Crypto is taking a real bath right now. Bitcoin, XRP, all those things are down. So anyway, that's neither here nor there, I suppose. But in a criminal investigation, let's talk about the three situations: means, motive, opportunity. I happen to believe, and this is just a belief that is not based on any fact except how these things usually work, that whoever is responsible for this had some dealings at that home or with Mrs. Guthrie prior to this. Comments?
Well, it's one or the other. If it's somebody that had some dealings with that home prior, well, then the police should be probably on their tail because, if you did some maintenance on that on the house, or if you were a delivery person on the house or whatever, they're going to be interviewing you right away. Or it could be somebody that is a little bit crazy and on the computer in some sophisticated way was able to determine that's where Nancy Guthrie's mother lived. And the fact that they are seeking crypto, it does to me seem like there is some kind of a technological expertise.
Now let's talk about something else here too. Can we evaluate the mentality of any suspect based on the organizations that received the ransom notes, because if you think back to the Zodiac case in the San Francisco Bay Area in the 1960s, that individual flourished on publicity. This is the Zodiac speaking. Can we make any inferences on this new case based on to whom the ransom notes were sent?
I would say that the FBI, they have these people that do psychological profiles. That would be an interesting fact that would help them to determine the profile of this kidnapper. I don't have that expertise, but I trust that the government does, and they're utilizing those resources.
You know, John, I kind of feel like I'm flying blind on this one because, as you well know, and if you look at the criminal statistics every year, violent crimes typically are, I know you, you know me, and we engage in an act of violence one against the other. Violent crimes generally involve people who know each other. Homicide, stranger on stranger homicide is relatively rare, but an adult kidnapping, we don't have a lot of data on which to draw, do we?
No, we don't, and that's probably one reason why this case is unusual and why it's become such high profile. I mean, this morning when I woke up at 7 and I started scanning all the television stations, local and the national news, they were just glued on it, you know? They were just glued on it, yeah. Very high profile.
Well, I mean, I don't think we have anybody listening to News Radio 930 WBEN who would remember when this happened, but the Lindbergh baby kidnapping was absolutely huge almost a century ago. For those of us, as you said, the other side of 60, thanks a lot for that reminder, John, but it does beat the alternative, grant me that. The Patty Hearst situation, and of course, Jimmy Hoffa. Jimmy Hoffa disappeared. Nobody was sure if he was kidnapped. Nobody was sure if he was dead. I think we now realize he was whacked. But and thinking overseas, Aldo Moro, the former prime minister of Italy, the Getty kidnapping. It's pretty. If you're looking for a lot of information on which to draw and apply information to the current situation, it's not that easy.
Tom, your brain is fascinating to just recall all of those kidnappings just like that. But there's not a lot of precedent. But I'm gonna go out on a limb, and I'm gonna say that I believe or have a strong hunch that the federal government, they know who they're looking for. There had to have been some sort of surveillance cameras at that house of this woman whose daughter makes $8 million a year. There had to be some more security devices besides the doorbell camera. There had to be, and in that neighborhood, I would gather that every single house had cameras all over the place. And then the entrance to that neighborhood, there had to be gas stations or convenience stores that had cameras, and you know, they have probably an 8-hour window to look at all the cameras and all the vehicles that went up and down that street and into that neighborhood, and they should have a pretty good idea of who that is, and they're probably, I mean, they have the ability to enhance the photographs and enhance the videos and look at the license plates. And, you know, I mean, I know my building is located on the corner of Main and Earl. And whenever there's an auto accident on the street, there's a knock at the door and there's a police officer wanting to look at the video of our building. And we give it to them and they figure out what happened. One time sometimes somebody smashed a door. It looks like they tried to break in, and it was caught on camera. And you know, we could see who the person was. The thing about this is, if this lady that was kidnapped, if she was not the mother of somebody that was famous, and it was just a missing person, The odds of that person being caught would have been different. The FBI wouldn't have been dispatched from all over the country you know, if this happened to somebody in Cheektowaga or Tonawanda or Sloan.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a valid point. It is Bowerly, Buffalo attorney, former New York State Trooper John Elmore is our guest. And, John, a couple of things. Number one, obviously, you know, we all play armchair detectives because we're all criminologists because we've all watched Law and Order. Some of us, Law and Order, SVU, and the various permutations of Law and Order, where even the most complex case is resolved in 1 hour. I do happen to think that the best leads are going to be found or have been found by an examination of video footage in the days prior to the abduction, the surveillance, which had to have been done, I believe, by the perpetrator. And the second thing, I hate to say, but given the probabilities involved and the medical condition of this 84-year-old woman, I do not believe she's alive.
Well, let's hope that she's alive. Let's hope that they catch this person and put him in jail for the rest of his freaking life. Stealing, you know, abducting an elderly woman and trying to extort money is like the lowest of the low. And this guy really, I hope this guy or woman or group of people, I hope that they catch him, and they catch him soon. But Tom, I just want to just think about your listening audience. You know, I mean, your show is very popular. You got people all the way from my hometown in Olean listening, and the suburban towns, and oftentimes there are missing people, whether it be a child, you know, that hasn't come home, you know, on Buffalo's east side, or an elderly person that, you know, out in Clarence or something, and they can't find him for a couple of days. And there's no national or even really local uproar or concern. But now we have the person that's elderly, and now the whole country's concerned. And it just seems to be a little unfair because, you know, the wealthy get treated a lot different than all of us get treated, you know?
You know, John, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on that. And look, I cannot disagree that rich people get better news coverage than poor people. But in this case, unlike, for example, a wandering senior, there is evidence of a violent crime, number one. Number two, there is a ransom as opposed to somebody who goes missing because they have dementia.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, there have been cases where there have been abductions in Buffalo's east side, and then they find a body in an attic two or three years later that's, you know, been, you know, just hidden in an attic, and nobody's really looked for the person, and that's really sad. But I guess I'm a person that loves people, and I like to see people treated equally regardless of their race, color, creed, or economic status.
You know, John, I hear the idealist in you, and I share to some degree those traits, but I've accepted a long time ago that my name ain't Rockefeller, and if I go missing, it ain't going to get the deal. It ain't going to be a big deal like if a Rockefeller did.
No, it's not. It's not. Tom, if you go missing, you know, well, let's hope you never go missing.
Well, hey, John, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. I appreciate your insight, and I hope this has a happy ending, but I'm extremely pessimistic about that. Appreciate
it, man. Thanks for the invitation, and listen, stay warm and stay safe, okay, Tom? And thank you.
Of course. Bye-bye. Of course, always. Buffalo attorney and former New York State Trooper John Elmore. We've known each other for decades. Kind of embarrassed to say that, really, because it's been a long time. What a long, strange trip it's been.